Today's episode is brought to you by Pitch Invaders, the online apparel business dedicated to fostering community and growing soccer in the heart of America. Based in the vibrant soccer hub of Arlington, Virginia, Pitch Invaders proudly champions their slogan, "The Pitch is for the People." Their mission? To unite soccer enthusiasts nationwide through their unique blend of casual and athletic gear. But Pitch Invaders isn't just about clothing. They're about collaboration, partnering with clubs, associations, and more. They create exclusive merch designs that promote their brands together. And here's the kicker. Partners receive a revenue split on collaborative merch sales to help support them. From the streets to the stadium, Pitch Invaders products boast soccer-related sayings on the back like, "You got nutmeg," "Press machine," and "Golazo getter." So whether you're cheering from the stands or dominating the field, gear up with Pitch Invaders and join the movement. Visit pitchinvadersusa.com to explore their latest collections and become part of something bigger. Use the code MATCHPLAY at checkout for 15% off your purchase. Pitch Invaders, the pitch is for the people.
Yeah, yesterday, Lisa, we were talking about this. I feel like I might be getting a little disconnected from the young guys. I feel like I've hit that age. I'm 40 now. I got little kids. I'm just, maybe I'm getting angry. You know, you see those old coaches that are just like angry all the time. I felt that way yesterday, before, during, and after my game. What do you think about how to handle like pregame in your locker room? What do you think it should look like? You know, you got a bunch of different personalities, a bunch of different, like, all right, this kid wants music, this kid wants silence, this kid's, you know, whatever, just reading. I had a kid reading, you know, like, what do you think it should be in there?
Yeah, we did a lot of work with that last year because we did a lot of mental preparation. We started journaling and kind of talking to the girls about what it looks like to get ready for practice and games and how to control their like emotion throughout that whole time. And a lot of it came back to the locker room before the game, because we have like a pretty nice dance party in our locker room, like music is bumping, but that doesn't work for everyone. And we actually talked about like, you got to recognize what level of activation for you prepares you for the game the most, and you've got to be true to that. So like, I had a kid who was like trying to be the wild and crazy fun dance party kid, but then that just made her more anxious from the game because she didn't have time to sit and think through and visualize, which was actually what she needed. But she felt like the perception of getting hyped for the game was being in the center of the dance circle and being loud and excited. So we really had them like look individually on what works for them, and then like communicating that to their locker buddies, the person next to them, so that they don't think someone's not engaged or what that person needs, and kind of respecting each other's way to get prepared.
That's a hard thing as a coach, because, you know, like, you coached kind of the way you were brought up or the way that you did it. And I know on game day, I had my water bottle that I drank until I probably peed 100 times before kickoff. And it was always quiet. If you talked to me, it was whatever response was needed to get out of the conversation. And I needed silence. I wanted to be left alone. And I thought anything more than that was, oh, you're just not ready to play. You know, I was just that way, you know, and everybody's got their own way of doing business. And, you know, I was talking to my assistant, Sean, and he was like, yeah, I'm the exact opposite. You know, I like to joke around, I like to have fun, you know, whatever, just, I like to be loose, I like to be free. And, you know, that type of stuff would totally mess me up, you know, like, it, you know, so it's, but how do you handle that in a locker room? You know, we've got 38 guys in mind, you know, how do you handle that many different ideas and different personalities? And what if they're sitting right next to each other? And what if they want silence, but the, you know, they got the bass going on the music, and, you know, like you said, you worked with your team on that. So how do you kind of, or what do you say to the kids that need certain things and they just physically can't do it? How do you have silence in a room that's jamming like that? What do you tell those kids?
So we have, our captains will stay, give them like a report time to the locker room, and then just to make sure everyone's there and starting to get through their process. But my girls are going in and out at all different times, kind of doing their own thing. So like in our current like home game, let's say, our girls will leave, a few of them will leave and go to the lobby and do their journaling. We'll have kids put their headphones on, go outside, play wall ball. They're like constantly coming in and out. And I'll see girls that are kind of come in for the last part of the dance party, because that's always like They got a few key songs and some special traditions and things like that. But there are some girls that, although they are in the building and around, they're not like in the locker room participating in all of the stuff if they're the ones that need quiet. And for me as a coach, like it's important that I see those players going through those processes all the time. So if I don't see that kid step outside to go play wall ball, I'm like, are you preparing? Don't forget, like you got to find time for this. Or if they're
Right.
running late that day, I'm like, I'll hold them accountable. I'm like, you need this to perform your best and to feel most confident. You have to prioritize that over, a couple minutes more of a nap or running and doing one more errand. Like, you have to follow your routine that you have proven worked for you. And if it's not working for you right now, you've got to create a new way. You've got to try new things until you feel most confident and prepared when that whistle blows.
So, Lisa, let me ask one question real quick. Sorry to interrupt, Cheese.
Very good.
So you've like gone through a process where you each player of yours on your team determine what works best for them, or did you like lay out a boilerplate for what could work and that sort of thing? Or did they
Yeah,
go through like figuring it out?
they go through figuring it out. But I've had like one-on-one conversations to, especially after maybe a poor performance or a game where they were really anxious or like couldn't control their emotions. I'm like, what did you do differently? What did you do before? How were you feeling when the game started? What did you feel during warm-ups? Like, let's figure out what's working, what's contributing to making you more anxious, what's contributing to making you more confident, and then let's start being consistent on the things that are giving us a positive outcome. We were finding even during our warm-ups, we'll have like an All-American on my team who will drop one pass during warm-up and she thinks the whole game is going to be awful. So we got to a point where we're like, when you're doing your stick work, your warm-up, once you feel good, stop, step out. Like, don't give yourself more time to make the mistake that makes you feel not confident. So, but it's me really having to start those conversations because they just feel like they have to do it the way that it's first outlined. I'm like, no, we can piece things together that's going to work for everyone. We want everyone to feel the most confident and ready when the whistle blows.
So journaling. So it's not like, I mean, you're a women's lacrosse coach, and it's not like writing with a pink fuzzy pen. It's like intentional things that like put their mindset in the right place. So talk a little bit about, the point of journaling in athletics and to prepare for a match.
Yeah, so we had tried journaling a few years back and we would like give them some prompts. And I always feel like it's such a private thing, so there wasn't a way to really like monitor it as a coach. But as a coach, that unless they're being intentional about it, they're not going to get the result and it's not going to happen overnight. You don't journal one time and then problems are solved, right? It's a process. So we got away from it and we got back to it last year because we felt like we were managing a lot of individuals where we wanted a way that we could kind of get to more people. So we actually bought these journals that are designed for athletes and it goes through a pre-practice or a pre-game and then a post-game, a page for each. So in that they write affirmations for themselves for that day. They set a small goal for that day. And then there's like visualization prompts. And then afterwards you follow up on those things. So it's like very scripted on what they do. Again, each player is going to give a certain amount of time and focus to those. But I would say more than half my team really started digging into the journaling, and it helped a lot. So we would have a team meeting before every practice, and so we would be able to give them that 5 minutes at the end of the team meeting to get through their journal, and then it was kind of on their own after practice. But we started seeing on game day when it wasn't as scripted of when they do it, we would see the girls grab their journal, go out to the lobby, and make sure they got that done. It just made them more intentional. I think it also made them take more ownership of like their player development and their mental state in the game, knowing that it's not just that little side conversation or that special high five that we have that's going to make you play better. It's the work that you're doing to get your head in the right spot, is going to help. And I think it really helps them not be afraid to say what they want, right? And it's their personal journal. They can dig into like, what do I really want to accomplish today overall, and how am I going to get there, without feeling like nervous to share it in front of a teammate or even to a coach. Because we fight that fear of failure quite a bit on our team. I think female athletes do a lot. So sometimes they get afraid to say what they want because then everyone will know if they failed. So the journal just kind of lets them chase goals without having to be afraid to fail.
Anybody get to see those journals besides them?
We did not do that. The company that we got the journals from, they do have kind of some guidelines on like how a coach can help with it and how it can be player to player. So we never really got into that. We wanted them to like buy into it first. This year I have been thinking about having them share like their practice goal with someone next to them or something like that, just in a small way first. But we
So
haven't really.
they could write something that's like really bothering them in there, and it's like totally safe. You're not going to read that. Like, oh, Coach Valentine said this to me today. I'm just not happy with her. I can't stand her. Like, that's okay. Like, that's the point of the book, right? Yeah.
Right, because then they can also then leave it behind when they
Yeah.
head out to practice.
Yeah, you get the poison out. That's what we call it. So what do you say then? So this is a situation I'm in. We had a tie that we're not happy with yesterday, but the whole team, I can't say the whole team, but a bigger majority than just a couple guys looked completely out of it. And I'm one of those guys that in the moment, if I'm not in a good mood, I just, I better be quiet. I've put my foot in my mouth more than enough times to realize, you know what, now's not the time to talk. So once I get home, I had a beer, I relaxed, I held my kids, came back to neutral, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's a lot of guys that weren't good. There's more on me than I'm thinking here. I'm not just blaming them here. So what's your kind of philosophy there? You've got a team performance that was poor. You gotta have some self-reflection on your own. Obviously the girls, or in my case, the boys did not have a good day. I'm hoping they have the individual self-reflection, but I gotta do the same thing as a head coach. What did I do wrong? What's my next process here? What's my step here? Now that I've got the angry out, now I can just actually sit down and think. So we've all had those games. So how do you handle it 24 hours later? What's going through your mind?
Yeah, I think I'm probably not as good as you of taking the 24 hours. I'm still in the phase of reacting right away. My staff and I always, after a game, will debrief, usually before we head out to our team tailgate, of like what we did well and what we didn't do well as a staff, and like where we fell short in the game. That way we can take accountability for that. And then when we're reviewing film and thinking about it, we can kind of take those pieces out of it. But we also reflect on what was our wording, phrasing, behavior, practice plans leading up to it. It's hard for us as coaches when we know so much about an opponent to not act a little differently as we're preparing for that. We like to say, right, every team is a challenge, every game matters. But if we're going into a game that, we have a high probability of winning, our shoulders are a little more relaxed at practice. We'll laugh a little bit more, right? The kids, they pick up on that, even if we don't mean it. And we're human, so we have to be able to have those emotions too. But I think it's important that we can't fault them if we contributed a little bit to it, like if we changed a little bit. But after the fact, I mean, we do a lot of self-reflection, like you said, taking that accountability as coaches, but then also asking the players, like, is this what you want? Like, did our coaching staff assign goals and dreams and like a purpose to the season that you guys aren't in line with? Because then we got to take a step back and make sure that we are chasing something the players want, not just something we are told,
Sure.
not just something we told them they wanted, or like for us, as this is a profession that our boss told us we needed to chase.
Right. Yeah.
Because if they are fine with tying a game that maybe won't impact them later on, like we've also got to align with that too in order to get the most out of them next time. Like, how do we pull more?
So if you were to apply this to to people who are listening to this, who are, of recruiting age, most likely, what are key questions to ask yourself after a match, after a training session, when it was good or when it was bad, or not up to what you wanted, how do you, what's the gauge to measure your performance, through maybe asking yourself some reflection questions and then planning coming out of answering those questions?
Yeah, I think in the time that we are in and what I'm seeing with especially female athletes right now, like we have to find the positive after a poor performance, or we are going to really struggle to improve our performance for the next time. And I'm such a realist. I'm like, we didn't do this well, we didn't do this well, I could have done this better. And so I lean on like what the actual facts were, but sometimes those facts come across as negative. So we really need to find the positives and sometimes comparing it to where we were even a year ago and showing that we've shown growth in that time. Maybe we haven't shown the growth as quickly over that time. So I think it's really important to pull the positives right away. And that way you can go into analyzing the negatives like with an idea that it's not the end of the world. And then I always ask my players and my staff, and I would say of recruits, I would advise them too, like, what's your plan to go forward? Right? You can't change that you shot 30% and we'd like to shoot 50%. It already happened. You can't change it. You can't fix those mistakes now, but what can you do to prevent them from happening in the future? Right? If you shoot poorly on Wednesday and you don't get in an extra shooting session by Saturday, you haven't earned the right to be upset that you shoot poorly on Saturday too. So what is your action plan to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, I mean, here we just played back-to-backs. We played a game Saturday, played a game Sunday. That is exactly what we'll go through in our conference tournament. We'll have to play, if we're not first or second place, I have to play three games in 4 days to win the conference tournament. And if we win it, or if we get in that large bid, I have to play Saturday, Sunday in the NCAAs, first and second round, Saturday, Sunday in the 16s and the 8s. And then I finally get one day off. If I ever make the Final Four, I get a day off before the finals. And so being able to play back to back, being able to turn back on, being able to have an emotional win, maybe, or an emotional game or whatever, and to be able to, okay, great, nice win. At midnight, we're flushing this and moving to the next game, and then perform again the next game. That's critical at our job. And so this is why we recruit so many games. If I can watch a kid play six, seven times, I'm going to do it because I get to see exactly what I'm going to get each time. I mean, if I go watch him once and he's great once, and then I don't go watch him again. Well, what if he's a donkey, the next three times I go watch him play? Scott, to pull a little something out from our coaching days together. And like that's critical. So I'll go watch a showcase and I'll make sure that if there's a kid I'm interested in, I'll make sure I watch him multiple times in the same weekend. So he plays Friday, I'll go watch him Friday, then I definitely go watch him at least start the game the next day. Because I want to see how he does. I want to see if he can turn back on. I want to see if he can say, hey, I've got another one. All right. It's another big game. I got it. You just say it yourself, Lisa, how do you, what's your coaching talk to these kids before a game? I mean, what game isn't important? Especially, in our world, technically every game is a conference game because every game is affected on the rating systems by Massey. So like technically we tied a conference game yesterday. And so, to be able to stay tuned in is the key. And so to all the kids listening to this or parents, you can't just show up, have one nice moment, one nice game on a weekend and think, oh, that's okay. The coach is going to remember that. Not the dog day I had today. Like, well, I need you 2 days in a row sometimes. And especially in Division III, it's you're absolutely playing back to backs, and you're going to have to win in order to move on.
Yeah, we're in the phase where we are with recruiting, with the 2025s. I'm starting to get a lot of like emails requesting phone calls and visits, and I'm like, I've watched you play one time. We're not ready for a phone call or a visit because that may have been your best performance ever or your worst performance. Like, I need multiple evaluations before we are at that phase. So that's definitely been interesting. I actually just had a recruit here this weekend. She's a goalie, so they do a little bit more mental training or know or have been told what to do to keep themselves mentally sharp. But she said that she's like, I know, I'm sure you saw it when you watched me play, but whether I make a save or a goal goes in or I, throw a pass out of bounds or I throw a great clear, she's like, I physically pretend to take a ball out of the net and throw it out. She's like, because whether it was a save or a goal, like it doesn't matter and it's over. I can't like rely on the fact that I made the save before or that I didn't for the, to make the next play. And I thought that was really interesting that she like physically just pretends to take a ball out of the back of the cage and throws it out to help herself reset, which I thought was pretty mature from a 2025.
I don't see too many young men just saying that
Yeah.
stuff. They're mostly like, "Hey, did you see my goal?" I'm like, all right. I also saw your mistake over and over
Yeah.
and over again. Geez, obviously we're not speaking with a soccer coach here. We have Lisa Valentine, who is the head
Correct.
women's lacrosse coach at Christopher Newport University. And I'll put all the link to your bio in the show notes and all that. And we're kind of dipping our toe in a different sport, but obviously a lot crosses over from what you guys do to, well, any sport really. So we've talked a lot about the mental side of things, which I think is huge. And in looking at your bio, I saw that you're an ambassador for Morgan's Message. Is that right? I actually just connected with them and gonna have someone on from their organization
Cool.
next week, I think. So anyway, great organization. But talk about, like, I was thinking when you're talking, you mentioned dealing with, trying to think of how to say this, dealing with, women, female athletes, and it's obviously different than, male athletes, right? For a lot of reasons. But talk about kind of the thoughtfulness that goes into coaching females and what the differences are and what you just have to be aware of as you coach a team through the year and, deal with different personalities and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think I've put a lot of thought into this in recent years. I think in sport is one of the biggest areas in my life that I always want to be like treated equally, especially to my male counterparts. I'm in a male-dominated profession, so it comes up a lot. And I've had multiple conversations on this topic, but I had a coach that was starting to coach women. For the first time, like, ask me, what do I do when they cry? And that was like their first question to me. And I was like, I think we've got some more work to do before I
Right.
can help you with that. But the biggest thing I always say is that the emotions and experiences that the athletes are going through, male or female, are the same. They just express them differently. So oftentimes, if there's like someone's feeling insecure about their play, right, a female athlete may get emotional about it, where and cry perhaps, where a male athlete is gonna like may take it out on his teammate, right? We see a lot more like pushing and things like that on teammates and a little more yelling and back and forth. Like they are both feeling insecure about their play. It's just how that emotion plays out to me that varies from female to male athletes. So that's what I always explain to coaches, like you got to figure out why that emotion is happening. And across all athletes, it's probably similar. It's just shown differently. And I think, again, with female athletes, it is the same. Like they want to know that you care about them as people and as players, and that you're going to be there to support them. I think one of my biggest struggles is like having them recognize that if they show vulnerability or weakness in off the field or on the field, like that doesn't take away from who they are as an athlete, right? There still is this mentality that we have to be tough all the time when we're out there, whether we're, especially for female athletes too. So trying to remind them that like showing some vulnerability and like working through the hard stuff is going to make you stronger and not just like pushing it down and fighting through. Which I think we've shown a little bit in our journals too, of like being vulnerable to where you feel weak, so that you can get stronger in that area.
I mean, I think that's really well said. Like, vulnerability is not weakness. Like, you just it's such a stigma on vulnerability that doesn't it's not what it means. So,
It's such a, if I could jump in, it's such a difficult thing too at this age. You're talking 18 to 22 year olds, and how different are all of your kids from day one to day 700? You know, I always ask my guys after after their sophomore season, so they've been here for 3 semesters, almost completed 3 semesters. So they have their exit meeting sophomore season. They're about to go home for holiday, and I always ask him, you know, tell me what you think of yourself today than what you thought of yourself when you checked in as a scrawny 18-year-old that, you know, was just starting college. And every single time they laugh. Every time they laugh, they're a completely different human being. And you know, going into the coaching aspect and connecting it all, it's like, you know, we have to treat everybody fairly, but you can't treat everybody the same. And on top of that, these kids are changing dramatically in an 18-month span. And it's you know, so it's, you know, not to say it's a tough job. It's still fun and still awesome, but at the same time, it is difficult. It is something that we have to work on every day as coaches. It's something that we have to identify. I mean, these kids come in as freshmen in the soccer world, and I need them to help me win games right away. And I don't even know them more than a few recruiting visits or a few watching of their games or a couple phone calls. I mean, they've never played for me. They don't know our system or anything like that yet. And you know, I haven't seen how they handle adversity at our level yet. And so, you know, to think a freshman could come in and just be perfect and sound for 90 minutes at a time, for all 20 plus of our games, that's a big tall order. It's a big tall ask. And so, you know, jumping back to advice for recruits, you know, we talk about all the time, Scott, how the best thing you could do is work out with these guys, work out with college kids. If you're a young person, you know, college kids are playing, go play with them because it's such a different game. We talk about it all the time. Maybe it's the same with you, Lisa, but it's also start focusing on the mental side of it. You know, like take care of all your business, get all your stuff in order. You know, you got school, jump on it. Stay way ahead of it. Don't let anything distract you. You got a game, start prepping for the game the day before. You know, start doing it now because that's what I'm going to demand of you when you're here. I'm going to demand that you're taking care of your business at home the day before. And we talk about waking up every morning, take a little shower, you know, drink your coffee if you need some coffee, get something in your system, brush your teeth, change your clothes. Don't just roll out of bed in your sweats that you slept in and throw some slippers on and roll to class. You know, actually be deliberate about your morning, and that's a great routine that's going to help you for the whole day. It's going to put you in a better place for the entire day. And that's something that, you know, that's just one example, but these are different types of ideas that young people that are trying to get to this level that want to play college athletics, these are some of the things that you're going to be demanded from when you're here. Why not start now? Why not start practicing those habits before you even get to us? You're 16 years old, knock it out. You know, you got to be at school at 7:30. Cool. Wake up at 6:30. Wake up at 6:30 and take care of all your business so you're ready to roll. You walk into that classroom and you're like, I'm ready to go. I'm not like still waking up here. You know, my teeth are brushed. I got clean clothes on. You know, it sounds funny, but how many times you walked around campus and you're like, oh, that kid just woke up, and then that you're going to class. Great. I've seen some of my guys, I'm like, man, do your hair. Like, put a little product in there, you know, like you're gonna run out of hair soon. I mean, we talk about this is the fourth podcast in a row we're talking about receding hairline, Scott. It's like just take care of your business. These little small things add up, and you're gonna perform better in training. You're gonna perform better on the weekends and the games, and you'll see it add up quickly. You know, add up the wrong way if you're not taking care of all your other business.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you talk about freshmen coming in and making that adjustment, especially to the mental side. So many times I'll have conversations with them and they want to talk to me about their strengths on the field or where they feel most comfortable, where they like to play. And I'm like, I've watched you play plenty of times recruiting you. Like, I know your strengths, I know your weaknesses, like I know your potential from recruiting you. Like when I ask you questions like what motivates you or how do you like to be coached or what makes you feel valued as an athlete? And they don't know how to answer those. I'm like, we've got work to do, because I'm like, do you need a coach that's going to be harsh and maybe yell at you a little bit? Do you need a kick in the butt, or do you need someone to pull you to the side and encourage you? How do you watch film? Do you learn from film? Can I just explain a drill verbally and you have it, or do you need a diagram? Like, even those type of things, I think for recruits as they prepare for college, like you need to know what makes you successful as an athlete, not just your physical ability to play the sport.
100%.
Lisa, let's back up a little bit and talk about kind of the the recruiting landscape in lacrosse, and she's and I obviously don't really know anything about it. So kind of, and if there's young student athletes on here, they don't know anything about it either, probably. So just kind of, outline what that landscape looks like and what your process is. And, in soccer, women's athletes are getting recruited very, very early. Is it the same thing in lacrosse? And, top to bottom, run through it if you can, please.
Yeah, so in lacrosse, we kind of went, we're in going through some changes. So we were at the phase where players were recruited really, really early. So there's stories of players that were committing in eighth grade to Syracuse and UNC and schools like that, some of which landed at those schools, some of which had made changes by the time they got there. But our coaches organization, the IWLCA, made a push to limit the initial contact date for Division I schools back to September 1st of their junior year. So Division II can contact July 15th of their junior year, as with the service academies, but all of the Division I schools can't send initial contact until September 1st. So that has really changed a lot in the landscape of lacrosse recruiting, and the men's side actually followed suit as well, so they have the same contact date. Of course, coaches can talk to club coaches, and everybody kind of knows who likes who. But they can't have those kind of official conversations. And then this year, they actually put in a little buffer period. So September 1st, you could contact. So kids were getting calls at midnight, but they couldn't visit until the 4th. So there was a couple days where they gave recruits the time to kind of have conversations and plan out where they wanted to visit. Obviously, I'm not on the Division One side, but I have, guided some players that were going through the Division One process, family, friends, and things like that. The fact that they are on the phone from midnight of September 1st, every single half hour through 2 days later, like the kid didn't go to school because she's got phone calls with college coaches, and college coaches showing up at her house uninvited to be able to have a home visit, making her miss calls from other coaches. So, a really stressful process. And I think everyone praises lacrosse for pushing back the contact date. But in my opinion, it's really added a lot of pressure to September 1st. There's so much buildup to that date. And then also so much letdown when you don't get the phone calls that you were hoping for or that your club coach thought you might get on that day. So, I think it's just become, instead of a process that maybe was too early, but like was longer, it's made a really emotional week and a really emotional month. So in terms of like Division III, we actually have the opportunity to talk whenever we want. So we are communicating right now with 2025s and have been throughout the summer. But then the same thing, we get to September 1st and we get instantly dropped by all these players that were initially contacting us, and then got the Division One looks that they were interested in, which is fine, but it's just really hard as a staff to kind of balance where are we going to put our energy and effort, to help us kind of pay off with that. And I really encourage recruits to be honest about the process. I am absolutely fine if you tell me I want to explore my Division One options first. Great. I can back off. I can focus some energy on some other people and then hope to hear from you if you come back around. Where what we're seeing now is they are keeping some of their Division III options on the hook, which ends up kind of, wasting a little bit of our time. We want everyone to find the right fit, but on both sides. So being honest and open from the beginning is what we always encourage. So that's a little bit about the background of where lacrosse is right now. I
So
think,
Lisa, quick question. So like in soccer, is it pretty much focused on club lacrosse versus like a school lacrosse program? Or do you kind of dabble in both?
all club lacrosse. We have, we have similar setup in terms of tournaments. So we are recruiting tournaments every weekend from Memorial Day to August, and then halfway through October through Thanksgiving is our big recruiting evaluation periods. And then there's obviously a million showcases and prospect days and every single weekend. So we're sorting through that. But so that's our general process. And I think for when we get down to the Division III level, every school is on a really different timeline. And I think that's what makes it hard for recruits. The September 1st contact date has really clearly defined what the Division I process looks like. But for players that are looking at Division II or Division III, they really are left in the dark about what that process might look like. And so I always encourage recruits, like, ask the coach what their timeline is and what the next step is. So for us, I'm trying to close out every email or text message with, this is the next step in the process. And so for us right now, most of our next steps are to come to a clinic on campus. So you can experience our coaching style. We can see if you fit into our style of play by putting you through our type of drills. And you get to meet players and all the benefits of being on campus. But oftentimes they'll respond and be like, great, can I set up a phone call? I'm like, that's not what the next step is for us. And so the coaches really need to drive what the next step is. And I think oftentimes club coaches are telling them, ask for a visit, ask for a phone call, where really, you just need to ask the coach, what is your next step? How do I move forward in the process? And then until you can do that part of the process, then we don't move on to the next one. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. The timeline thing, we have the same idea with timeline. And sorry, regarding when people can talk and commit and when Division One schools can call a kid. And I've kind of changed my tune on all that. I think it should be fair if a kid wants to, speak to a big D1 program as a freshman or sophomore. I don't see why they shouldn't be able to. And I get the whole point of, well, we just don't want them committing when they're 14, 15 years old. And I totally understand that because a kid at 14 versus a kid at 16 is a totally different human being. So I totally understand that. And you kind of want to say, hey, you just can't commit until this time. But, to your point, Lisa, these kids they're missing school. They're going 3 or 4 days in a row where it's just emotional 30-minute phone call followed by 30-minute phone call. And all, now us, the D3s of the world, we're just kind of sitting off to the side, waiting until these kids get their offer or not. And then so we're just waiting and our programs are taking hits. And then we start changing the way we want to recruit. It's like, you know what? I'm gonna get answers now. And if they don't want to commit to me, I'm moving on to the next kid. And it's turning into kind of an ugly thing. And being able to kind of extend that process, being able to say, hey, you could talk earlier. You could definitely have these conversations. You just can't commit. That at least can get the ball rolling and you could spread the stuff out. You could speak in the evening. Like, hey, coach, I can talk to you on Thursday at 6 o'clock. I'd love to. You could spread it out and you're not just inundated with calls. I mean, 1 o'clock in the morning, you're getting, I mean, that is just like, man, I don't know if my kids are going to be any good, but I'm going to be very disappointed on that day. I'm going to be on the call too. Like, why do you call? All right, come on, what are you doing here? So, are you noticing, is it different men and women too? Like what's the timeline normal committing? I know that we've changed the dates and all, or you guys have done, it's great. But are women still committing way before men are in lacrosse? Because that's
Yes.
absolutely what's happening in soccer.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
you said it yourself, even though you've got that date. I mean, I used to coach club women. And I had a kid get a phone call. Sorry, I got the phone call about a kid from a Power Five big time program. And she was in September of her freshman year of high school. And like, they're still calling, they're still finding you, anyways. So just take away all those random barriers and let them have the actual direct conversations. And, it's up to the kids and the families to still make good decisions. And you can't commit, anyways. Just like, kind of leave it like that. But, anyways, back to the lacrosse, men and women timeline.
Yeah, I mean, I think a difference between men and women, which I know I joke with Cheese about this a little bit. Like, on the female side, we're usually a little more organized, a little more planned out.
Lot
So I
more
think these
organized.
girls have done research. They've looked through schools, they've looked at random admission sites, they've got a spreadsheet of like all the schools that they want to be in touch with or have come to their games, where I think sometimes on the men's side, they can kind of let the process come to them a little bit more, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. But we have a 2025 committed already. She committed this summer after camp. And at camp, she played really well. And I was like kind of joking, I'm like, we should just offer her now, because to me it was really early. And then our club coach emailed me and was like, what'd you think? I'm like, honestly, we would offer her if she was ready. And they're like, she's ready. I'm like, great. That's awesome, because the kid knew. She's like, it's her dream school. It checks all of her boxes. She's come to a ton of events. She had gone through the entire process with us. And so I was, shocked to have a commitment that early, but I was confident the kid had done all of the preparations to know it was the right choice. So I think
Right.
that is one of the differences. But I think something that's interesting to me in this recruiting process, and I think club coaches, parents, and recruits forget, that like we have to focus on our teams that are on campus. So I'm not even in season. I'm in my non-traditional season, but I'm like, we have our fall prospect day on this coming weekend. And I'm like, after that, I got to be focused on my team. Like, we've got practice. Like, I don't have time to be talking on the phone to 15-year-olds when I've got 18 to 22-year-olds that need a lot of guidance and help, not just on the field, but off the field, right in front of me. And I'm really open with recruits. Like, if you don't visit or commit by the time I start my spring season, you're probably not going to hear from me until May. And it's not because I don't like you. It's not because I don't want you a part of my team, but I've got to focus on the people that are in front of me. And I think sometimes coaches get lost in the recruiting process and focusing on that. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got some culture issues on your team that you weren't paying attention to, or your team's not developing in the way that you wanted because you're worried about the future too much. Like, we've got to coach the kids that are here, and recruits have to respect, and parents and club coaches have to respect that as well.
Well, and also think about, like, you're recruiting for the future, but what do you need in the future? You have to answer by what you have in house. And if you're not focusing on that, if you're not developing that, if you have a young kid that's not getting a much time, but you like have plans for that girl in the future, well, you need to see how she's developing, see how she's learning. And even though she's not playing, is she going to play next year when that senior leaves? And if the answer is yes, you know for sure, great, then you don't have to recruit that position, but you have to go through the process of coaching her, maybe giving her some spot minutes from time to time to, you know, really test the waters. And then from there, you can say, okay, it's not good enough. I definitely need that position for next year's class, versus, oh, it is good enough. I can now focus my recruiting efforts elsewhere. And, you know, our timeline's a little different because we're in the fall, and I'll have a lot of kids early in the fall, like, hey, you know, like I'm ready to move forward here. And I say, you need to pump the brakes, kiddo. Like, my guys just checked in. I need to spend 2 weeks of preseason and scrimmages, and then I need about a month of games to see how this kid's going to adjust, how this kid's going to factor in before I can know for sure what I need for next year's class. But that puts me in October, November of some of these kids' senior years, and I don't have the exact answer on if these freshmen are good enough to play for me or not. You know, long term, or do I, maybe I missed there. Oh, this kid's way better than I thought. Don't bring in another kid in that position in next year's class, you know? So a lot of recruits don't see that. You know, a lot of families need to say, oh, well, that's right, they've got a team right now. And that's, by the way, our job is to win games.
Yeah.
You know, like they'll let us go if we don't win enough. I mean, they've made that clear here. So, you know, we have to focus on that. And there are definitely dry periods in the year where I'm like, I'm sorry, my inbox is going to get a little big right now, and I will deal with you when my season wraps up. I mean, it's a little annoying, but it's the way it is.
To your point, like, in our timeline, so I got a little stressed when you said, like, of, you know, October of their senior year. I'm like, oh, I would be freaking out right now if I was committing seniors right now. But our timelines are different. I already know who I'm having next year. So, like, for our process, it extends even further. Like, I've got a group of 2024s that all committed within the last year that I'm like, I'm not going to know how they're going to develop on my team. And I'm already committing the 2025s.
Right.
So when players ask if they can have an impact in the program, and sometimes coaches give what they would perceive as like a vague answer, how would we know unless you are a really, really special kid? Because we are 2 years out from seeing what our team is going to be like then. Like, we can project and we can hope, but like, things pan out differently.
Lisa, you talked about prospect day, you know, clinics, prospect day, and SOC, you know, Cheese calls it an ID camp. Talk a little bit about the importance of that. I've seen things said out there that, you know, it's a money grab for coaches, which, you know, I don't agree with, but I think plays an important part. And talk about, you know, why it's important for you guys and what it accomplishes, and why it is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, let me touch quickly on the money grab thing. I don't think coaches are secretive about the fact that they do make some money off of prospect days, but I think it is the recruit's job to ask the right questions to make sure they are going to the right clinics that are not a money grab for them, right? Have you been communicating with the coach? Have you been getting emails? Are the emails personal? Do you have any idea if they're recruiting your position? Like, ask questions before you spend the money to go to a certain prospect day. But then I also say, like, if we are in your top five, like, you likely will not be offered a spot unless you come to a prospect day. So if it is one of your top schools, it regardless of who's making money off of it, it is worth it for you because that's where you want to end up. And I've had players that through whatever for whatever reason with their club team, like maybe they play in a different position or they happen to not get a lot of playing time was while I was there, this or that. Like they come to a prospect day and their evaluation is drastically different, sometimes in a good way. And they wouldn't have had the opportunity to get an offer from CNU if they weren't at a prospect day. So I'm like, it really is your last and best chance to kind of impress that coach because why it's valuable is like you would get to play on our field with our coaches in our system through our drills. So if for example, I play a very like principles-based offense, we don't run a lot of like set pieces, so I don't script a lot from the sideline. I go watch you in a club team and everybody's calling a set play every single time. I have no idea if you actually know how to play lacrosse. I know that you can follow directions. So when you come, yeah, maybe you are that top dodger that gets the isolation drawn up for them every time. Great. But then you come to my prospect day and you're playing in our drills that are a little more free flowing and you can't find the one more pass, you're not going to be successful at CNU. And it works both ways, right? I can see negatives at with your club team that then I see positives at the prospect day. So I think that's a really important piece. And also from the recruit side, like I get so tired of answering the question on the phone, is your team close? What's your team culture like? What's your coaching philosophy? How do you describe yourself as a coach? I'm like, it doesn't matter what I say about myself and my team. Every coach is going to say their team is close. Every coach is going to say that they are pay attention to details and they believe in fundamentals and they don't run their team too much and they don't yell that much. Every coach is going to say that. It's recruiting. Like, come and experience it. Like, ask my players how many times they've been put on the line randomly. Ask my players, like, do I yell a lot? Come ask my players, like, what my pet peeves are. Like, come see how my players talk to each other. See if they are enjoying being at a prospect day at 8 a.m. because they care about this program. Like, you have to get on campus to experience those things, and you're not always going to get invited to come for like a day visit or an overnight visit where you get to spend time with players because you're not on that part of the list yet. But like you can get those answers from a prospect day, and then you can hopefully get that invite for another visit from that prospect day. So it's just as valuable to the recruit as it is to us in terms of getting information.
Yeah, and let's say you're a Southern Virginia school that's doing lacrosse, and you're a younger sport, so it's heavier talent bases north of us, much further. A lot of these kids aren't just like, well, I'm just gonna go to CNU today. I mean, maybe they're 6, 7 hours away. Like you and both Mikey with our men's program, you bring in kids from out of state, and you have to, as this sport continues to grow here in Virginia. But what the other way that kids can see you is to watch the games. Watch the games. Go online. Oh, okay, I can see how the kids are reacting. I can see how happy they are in pregame, and they're cheering each other on. And I mean, if you're watching our women's lacrosse team, you're hearing so much cheering on the sideline. I mean, you could hear that. Even if you're not at the game, you're just watching the game on the live stream. You're like, all right, well, these girls seem to really like being a part of this program. And then you could do the research from there on how good they are, or do you fit the style and all that fun stuff. And then once you kind of get past that and you're like, all right, I think Lisa's a good coach. I think I could play at CNU. I like the way they play. Now she's seen me play. We're having some discussions. Now it's time to get into the questions of, hey, Coach Lisa, hey, Coach Valentine, tell me how I fit in your mind. Like, you have to get really specific. Don't be vague. You're absolutely correct. And I make that joke every single time a kid asks me, what's your coaching philosophy, or these vague questions, or what's your team culture like? I'm just totally sarcastic. I'm always like, well, have you ever had a coach say they have terrible culture and they need you to come in and save the program? Like, no coach is going to say that ever. Okay. Even if they're the freaking locker room's on fire. No, everything's going great. It's going great in here. It's just the way it is. And so you have to be specific. How do I fit? Where do I fit? How early do you see me playing? Like, what about me socially do you see working me? Like, just be blunt.
And
That's our job.
if those coaches can't answer those questions, then it gives you more information about where you actually are on their list or how
Right.
important you might be to
Excellent
them.
point.
I've been shocked by the number of recruits I've had in this 25 class that my process this fall or this summer was I would email you feedback the first time I saw you play. I'd text you feedback the second time, and then we'd set up a call for feedback the third time I watched you play. And these players were shocked that I was giving them specific feedback on their play. I'm like, well, what are other coaches doing when they're sitting there for 8 hours? They're not willing to share the information. Like I struggle when coaches are like gatekeeping the feedback to these recruits. Like we're here to serve them too. Like they were shocked that they were getting specific feedback, or that when they would ask that question, do you see me fitting into your program? And I could describe really specifically what they do well already. And they're like, wow, that sounds just like me. I was just shocked that other coaches aren't giving that specific feedback. You know, sometimes it works out for me. Sometimes it kind of, I'm like, you said I communicated the most, I gave the most feedback, and you still didn't choose me. It's a bummer.
Talk about some of the other things that you look for other than, you know, stick work or tactical awareness. I'm going to kind of stumble on all over myself trying to figure out, you know, non-soccer terminology. But you know, one thing that's probably common is the way a player reacts after they make a mistake. And that has to be, I'm imagining that's really important to you, you know, observing that. Talk about like some of the things other than how they're playing that is important to you when you're evaluating players.
Well, I think recently I've been a little bit more committed to making sure that I'm recruiting players that are going to fit our style of play. So not just their necessary skills. I kind of mentioned playing with a little less structure than other teams, but we also push transition and we're not trying to like take time off the clock. So I really am looking for players that have that IQ to be able to do that and are willing to do that and aren't afraid to take those risks forward. So that's really important to me. In terms of like outside of lacrosse skill, I'm a relationships coach and I need to be able to connect with you. So honestly, being able to have like an easy phone call or to be able to like have a conversation that gets off track from lacrosse a little bit because we're talking about some other stuff is really important. I tell recruits all the time, I'm like, you want to feel connected and inspired by the coach that you play for. So we've got to find a way to connect that way. So I struggle, honestly, when players are really quiet and don't have answers to questions and aren't able to just have that communication, because I'm like, I have to communicate with you so much in your time here. I'm going to need you to like talk to me. So that's a really big piece for me. In lacrosse, we have like when we ride, like we turn the ball over on the offensive end and we have to ride and defend back. That is a really big indicator of players' maturity to be able to see the big picture. And their effort in that area, I think, is really important. There's oftentimes I write down, like, she didn't even make it to the restraining line before she gave up. And I'm like, the kid might not have caught her. Like, I know that you have no chance of catching her based on your speed, but like, she might drop the ball. And then when you're behind her, you'll be the one to pick it up. So it's still on the field, but those are areas that I really look at. I also look at just their engagement on the sideline. She's kind of hinted at our team is really dynamic on the sideline. I think that's important to me when I'm watching a player. Like when you get subbed out, are you still watching the game? Are you cheering on your teammates? I see it a lot with goalies, right? They usually split time at our club events. And like when the other goalie is not engaged at all in the game because she knows she's not playing for the first 30 minutes, it drives me crazy.
Talk about the role of parents that you like to see when you're recruiting a kid and, you know, how they walk kind of that fine line of not enough and too much and just the right amount of interaction, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think this is another one where I think recruits and parents and club coaches should be advised to ask the coach what they want the involvement of the parent to be. Because oftentimes I think club coaches just tell them, you're not involved at all. And then I'm like, you are part of my program for four, maybe more years. I need to know if you're a good person too. I want to know if you feel inspired by the things that I have to say as a coach too. Like, are you going to support your daughter playing for me? I would say I probably like more parent involvement than most coaches. I have no problem talking to parents at club events. I tend to get into like my recruiting talks in my office tend to end up being recruiting advice and answering questions for parents. So I like more involvement. I don't like them to be the initial contact, right? We want recruits to be doing that on their own. But once your parents are on campus, like we should all be having a conversation because they are a big part of who you are as a person, right? They raised you. I can tell a lot about whether you're going to fit well in my program by getting to know your family as a whole, not just you as a lacrosse player.
Yeah, it's it obviously we all have horror stories of parents that have just been way over the top. I mean, I don't even I definitely don't like the first email coming from a parent. Like, I'm just not a fan of that type of stuff. But I also am a I'm not a fan at all of parents that just say, "Oh, it's his decision." Like, well, what do you mean? Like,
I'm like,
it's
he's
he
paying
doesn't
for
need
it? Is
any
he
like he
paying
doesn't need
for
any help, right? He's a 16-year-old, he's about to make a great 4-year, 100+ thousand dollar investment. You're great idea to trust him fully on that without any guidance. I mean, just a little nudge here. Hey, son, don't think about this. Or, hey, sweetheart, did you even think this way? Like, just something to think about. And I know that kids are always this way. It's like, mom, you don't know what you're talking about. Dad, you don't know what you're talking about. So, you know what? That's why you should listen, because my mom isn't thinking about what my soccer style is going to be. She doesn't know any of that. She thought everything was offside. She doesn't know. But what she does think about is stuff like, well, do you see the dorm you're going to live in? Are you sure you want to live in this dorm? Are you sure like this food's going to be adequate enough? I mean, 4 years of eating this food, are you going to be okay with that? And what about the community? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I get on the phone with the kid, and the only thing I want to talk about is soccer. And I'm like, you know what? We're already a month into our season. One more month, and we are like 10 days away from playoffs. And then if we lose, we're done. That's 45, 50 days from now, our season could be completely over. And then I don't see my guys again, other than a non-traditional spring season, which for us is much different than Lisa's fall. I can kind of dive into that too, but I don't see them again for anything that actually matters until August 16th again. And so it's such a small, condensed season, and you have to think so much more than just like, coach, am I going to play? Am I your guy? Like, it's just so much more to the full experience, especially if you're paying for it. And so please, parents, like, obviously, we don't want you in my office talking to me nonstop and like just doing everything for the kid, but don't just sit on the sidelines. Give them the nudge, let them think about stuff. Even if they argue with you a little bit, it's like, hey, I'm just saying, what if coach never plays you? What if you get hurt? This past week, I had a kid tear his patella tendon. His season's over. Is he still happy here? Loves it here. Of course he loves it here. But he did all the other research. He did all the other things. His parents were very helpful in his process. And even though he's done, he's not going to the portal. He's like, I'm coming back, coach. I'll see you in August. I'll see him before that, but on the field in August. Like, okay. He did his research.
Yeah, there's nothing better than a dad that sits in my office and thinks he's going to ask the most challenging questions in the world that I've heard
Right.
800 times before. Is my daughter going to play? I got an answer for that.
Right.
Why choose D3 over D1? Like, I've been asked all those hard questions, Dad. Just let us have them.
There's nothing you can ask us that we have another answer to. Actually, I did have one, Lisa, and I'm very embarrassed about this question. We were walking through our library, and they were asking about the history of Christopher Newport
You,
and the ships and
you've
everything.
never been to the library, Cheese?
Like, I was like, first of all, I didn't know this was a library. But he was
Thought we were in the
asking
dining
about
hall.
the ships, and I go, oh God, what were the names of the ships? And I'm like, I'm embarrassed. I'm sorry. That was the first time I was just totally. I mean, I should have known, like it's the name of my school. I felt a little, let me go do a little research. Now I know. I named my ID camp after the Discovery ship, so
Right.
we're I figured it out. We got it. I'm not a history buff, but we got it.
That's
So.
funny. Yeah, Lisa, talk about your non-traditional season. I'm curious about that.
Yeah, so I think Cheese and I have had this conversation quite a bit. I think the timing of ours compared to a fall sports being in the spring is what makes it different. So we are building towards our competition season. So our what we are working on and talking about in my messaging all starts to build throughout the year up until that spring season. So we can talk now about our goals and they stay relevant throughout the year versus, with cheese where then they go home for 3 months. Mine only go home for a month in between the two semesters. So we have that. We also have a longer acclimation period for our freshmen. So I have 13 freshmen on campus. They're going to get 21 fall days before they have to step into preseason. And then our preseason is long. We have about a month of practice. So our freshmen are getting a significant more time practicing with the team to help them become more acclimated. And right now they're such a big bulk of our team that our returners are struggling to play with so many new people. So that's really helpful for us. So we will break our fall season down into kind of like two little segments. The first month, we're only practicing twice a week, is really going to be skill based, really focusing on the details. And then that second month, as we lead into our fall competition, that's when we'll start putting like some team concepts and really kind of see what we have. But when we walk off the field at the end of our fall season, that's the group that I'm going to see in the spring. That's the group that I'm taking to competition, which is different, obviously, than our fall sports, who's missing their freshmen and their seniors are no longer with them and that sort of thing. So it's definitely like a build to the spring season, and it builds excitement. Also gives me a little bit more time of planning. So I spend my winter break being like analyzing how the fall went, so I can plan my spring and my preseason on where our weaknesses are and what adjustments we need to make.
Yeah, and to compare it to soccer, or to fall sports, I mean, a year ago, I brought in 11 guys and lost 20. With COVID, I basically graduated two classes, and then I had a couple of guys that just it didn't pan out for whatever reason. And so it ended up being 20 guys gone. I think it was 11 or 12. I can't remember exactly, but you're talking over a 30-person turnaround. And the first time I saw them was 14 days before our first real game. It's just. Those freshmen, they're not on a college diet yet. They're not in a college weight room yet, being trained by our awesome trainers here. They're not college athletes that are dealing with the academic rigor and being away from home for an entire time. And some of these kids, hours and hours away from home. It's their first time for all of that stuff. And this is where I think that it's super beneficial for the spring sports. It's like you get to that kid, that freshman is going to actually look like a college athlete come your spring season. At least much closer. I mean, Scott, we talk about Augie. What did Augie look like when he checked in? And Scott, like Coach Norris is trying to use him right away, and he's skin and bones, And it's and he looks amazing now. He looks like a big college man right now. And so it's just so different. In 18 months, he looks so different. In just 6 months, they look so different. And I would love to have, like, give me a month. Just give me 1 month where they're here, and I can actually like. Get these freshmen a little bit closer to where they need to be. It's hard, and this is why we talk to these recruits. Like, you need to start early. You need to start so much earlier. You need to get in the weight room and make sure it's organized. Make sure you're getting some sort of training, some sort of proper help. Otherwise, you're just going to hurt yourself. Make sure you're training with these college athletes. And even though Lisa's going to have time, that's good advice for her girls coming in as well. I mean, why not get yourself a head start? Don't just wait until you get there before you start becoming a college athlete. Start working on it now. Start working on it before we get to you and. You're going to see how much quicker you're taking steps once you get here.
Yeah. The weight room, especially, that's something I've started incorporating more in my recruiting process. It's really important to my program. And I don't
Yeah.
shy away from like the numbers that my girls are putting up so that when they are juniors in high school, they're like wide-eyed. How am I ever
Yeah.
going to get there? I'm like, well, you got to start now if you
Yeah.
want to get to where we are.
So we're an hour in. I want to be respectful of your guys' time. But I do have one more question, and it's going to be a dumb question to you, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Why don't women's lacrosse players wear helmets?
I don't have an answer for that. But yeah, I don't know, but I don't want us to either. So I maybe should come up with an answer. I think the sport of lacrosse is really interesting phase right now because there's so many different versions of the game. Obviously, the men's game and the women's game are very different, outside of just the physicality. Women's lacrosse is technically a non-contact sport, which makes no sense considering we If you could see the bruises on my kids' arms, you would know that it for sure is a contact sport. But we play on a bigger field than the men. And we play with true two-way middies that go back and forth both ways, where the men usually will sub off. So it's definitely really different. We have this new version of lacrosse called sixes that is they're trying to get in the Olympics because the Olympics wouldn't take two different sports, so they needed to come up with one version that would work for men and women. So sixes is what's being proposed to the Olympics. Our professional lacrosse is completely different, both from the men and the women. There's a 2-point line in both of those versions, different shot clocks, everything. And then the international game is also different and different rules. So it's really, really challenging for people to understand our sport when they show up each day and it's different and they don't know what's going on. And so I think that is like our biggest barrier right now for lacrosse. So I know that's not the answer to your question, but it shows why I'm confused as well.
Yeah, I knew it was a silly question to begin with, but I figured I'd ask it and see.
Always say if they're going to put us in helmets, then we're not wearing skirts.
Fair enough.
If you're going to put a helmet on, then we'll wear shorts.
Geez, you got anything else? Did I cut it short, or are we
No, this is
we don't have to
perfect.
get it all in one. We Elisa is welcome anytime, obviously, but yeah.
No, this is perfect. I actually have one of my athletes in here right now, and we're about to have a very tough conversation. He's not smiling. I thought that'd make him smile. Well, there we go. I got smirk out of him.
Oh, great.
Is this the
But
kid
I'm
you were talking
like,
about earlier that
yeah, I
you
remember the one I was
needed?
gonna cut. I was gonna let him go. Anyway, bigger smile. There you go. It's gonna be okay. No, he's a good kid, one of my captains. So, but I am gonna, it's gonna be pretty tough. We should probably film that. That'd be great.
Yeah,
But
right.
we should.
We
I
could
would
just
like to
re-show him the
say,
start of this conversation.
I mean, that might be one of our most watched things is me, getting after one of my players. It might be pretty fun. So I might get fired too. But
You breaking the chalkboard or whatever.
that's right. But no, Lisa actually is she's I'd say, what do you think? Every 3 or 4 months I give you a call where you have to kind of, hey, it's okay. It's okay. And so just it was a 2, 3 weeks ago, I called Lisa, and I basically she lets me vent and get all the poison out. We share a wall. She's just we're actually like 20 feet from each other right now. There's just a big wall on the way, and so we're really tight knit. Our programs are coaching staffs at least are really really close, and the support's great. And Lisa backs me off the ledge quite a bit. I almost called you last night, Lisa, after my results. So
I watched it, so I'm
I
still
mean
here if you
you.
need a perspective shift. That's one of my
Well,
strengths as a
you
coach,
can handle this
shift
conversation
perspective.
right here, so that'll be fine too. But no, Lisa's been great, and that's one of the best things about here. I think that a lot of our programs are like that, and like I'm going to go over there and talk to our women's coaches. They just got back from Ohio, a good weekend for them, and I'll go vent to them a little bit because they watch our team all the time and they know our guys, and so I'm assuming they're going to watch the game and have some opinions. So, but no, Lisa's been great, and I'm glad she was on the podcast today, and I'm probably going to go over and talk to her in a few minutes. So.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Yeah, we'll definitely have you on again.
Sounds good.
You did a great job, so really appreciate it.
Cool. Awesome. See ya.
Thanks.